The Holy Gospel according to Luke. Glory to you, O Lord. Then Jesus said to the disciples, "There was a rich man who had a manager, and charges were brought to him that this man was squandering his property. So he summoned him and said to him, 'What is this that I hear about you? Give me an accounting of your management, because you cannot be my manager any longer.' Then the manager said to himself, 'What will I do now that my master is taking the position away from me? I am not strong enough to dig, and I am too ashamed to beg. I've decided what to do so that when I am dismissed as manager, people may welcome me into their homes.' So summoning his master's debtors one by one, he asked the first, 'How much do you owe my master?' The man answered, 100 jugs of olive oil. The manager said to him, 'Take your bill, sit down quickly, and make it 50. Then he asked another, "And how much do you owe?" Another man replied, 100 containers of wheat. The manager said to him, "Take your bill and make it 80. And his master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly, for the children of this age are more shrewd in dealing with their own generation than are the children of light. And I tell you, make friends for yourselves by means of dishonest wealth, so that when it is gone, they may welcome you into the eternal homes. Whoever is faithful in a very little is faithful also in much, and whoever is dishonest in very little is dishonest also in much. If then you have not been faithful with the dishonest wealth, who will entrust you to the true riches? And if you have not been faithful with what belongs to another, who will give you what is your own? No slave can serve two masters, for a slave will either hate the one and love the other, or be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise to you, O Christ. Please be seated. This week marks a momentous occasion in our lives. The most important thing for many of us will happen in just a few days. We have been waiting for this. Some of us praying for it. Some of us check the calendar every day, anxiously wondering if today is the day. And others are perhaps less aware, less concerned, less focused on what is coming. Do y'all know what I'm talking about? PFDs, right? All right, everybody's like, "Oh, am I going to be the one?" Yes, PFD week. Now, for you non-Alaskans, I know that's a very specific thing, but PFDs come out this week. Now, as a fairly new Alaskan, I'm only 5 years in. When do I get to stop saying I'm a new Alaskan? When is that mark, right? 20 years? Oh, boy. All right. All right, so 15 years ago, but as a fairly new Alaskan, I advise other new Alaskans to avoid talking about three major topics, right? So I tell them, do not express a public opinion on these three topics until you've done a lot of listening, because these are the hot button issues of our state, right? PFD is the first one. Any other guesses what the other two might be? Fishing, oil, right? Keep your mouth shut on PFDs, fishing, and oil if you are new to Alaska. That's what I tell all the pastors who move here. I say, just keep your mouth shut. All three of them can come down to one common thread: money. The PFD is the literal exchange of money. Oil and gas has been the big money that brought many of you to this state. And fishing, while it's not as lucrative as it once was, is still money-based for those debating over who gets what fish and in what method of getting fish, what is to gain. And let's be honest, the two things that our parents discouraged us from talking about in public were religion and politics. And the third is probably money, right? We don't advertise what our salaries are. We don't advertise what we paid for our vehicles or our homes. We certainly don't want to talk about how much money we have in our checking account or our savings account. Money just remains hush-hush because it's an entirely emotional thing that feels very private. And while I don't know the full history around why money feels so taboo, I can point to some Jesus stuff in the Bible that doesn't exactly make it enticing to share how large your 401k is or how your investment portfolio is doing. In fact, Jesus says a lot of stuff that makes any sort of financial security seem really shameful, right? I mean, this is the guy that told his disciples to go out and preach and teach and take nothing with them. Like just the sandals on their feet and the clothes on their body. Don't bring extra cash. Don't bring gift cards. Don't bring gas points. Don't bring airline miles. Do not bring anything, Jesus says, to go out and do your ministry. And trust that whoever you encounter will take care of you. That's not the disciple that I am. I mean, on any given day, I've probably got two jackets in my car, an extra pair of shoes, and I stash snacks in little compartments in my office, in my glove box. So if you're ever hungry in the middle of service, just go to my office, it's okay. And I keep a booklet with all my gift cards and coffee cards in the center console, because, right, like, the win when you go and get a free coffee that you've earned, right, it's a high, right? But I am far too excited when these sort of little forms, these little expressions of wealth pop up in my life. But wealth is a funny thing because we don't really want to claim that we have it. Very few people say with confidence, I am wealthy, because that word suggests extravagance, excess, and exuberance. But I think finding meaning out of Jesus' teachings that fall somewhere between nothing but the shoes on your feet and having multi-million dollar mansions with pools and golf courses, we can find a space in there. Now, Jesus tells this parable, and if I'm being completely honest, this parable, this story, is a really hard one for me to interpret. And from my study, a lot of theologians also struggle with how to make sense of this particular story. So I'm not going to be able to wrap it up in a nice, neat little box that you'll walk out the door and say, I completely understand that story. Sorry, you can get your money back. It's not going to happen, right? But I'm going to struggle through it with you. In his telling of this parable, Jesus tells the story of a master, a business owner, and his manager. And the owner is mad at the manager for being so wasteful. So then the owner says that he's going to fire the manager. The manager then goes in and reduces a ton of debts for the people. 100 jugs of olive oil becomes 50, 100 containers of wheat becomes 80, and so forth. Now, at first read, I was like, oh, I've seen this coworker before. This is the person who doesn't do their job, who doesn't do it well or ethically, and then when they finally get in trouble, they just blow it all up, right? They delete computer files, they shred documents, maybe they spit in food if they're a restaurant worker. They cannot be bothered to show any care or compassion. They're just like, go ahead, burn it to the ground, I'm out. Now, I hope you haven't had a coworker or an employee like this, but if you have, you know what I'm talking about. But if that's what this manager's intention was, which we don't know, the owner goes from firing him from being a terrible employee and wasting his money to commending him, to praising him, to celebrating him, to rewarding him. What? He was going to be fired for being a wasteful employee that makes all these side deals, reducing the debt and ultimately reducing the owner's personal gain, which would bring less money, right? He makes these side deals and the owner praises him? What company owner wants to make less money? That's why you fired the bad manager, right? Jesus, you are out of control here because this parable makes no sense whatsoever on a fiscal kind of level. Now again, I'm not convinced that this is the one right way to interpret the parable. But what I think I've landed on is that for Jesus, it's not just the what of the situation, but the why. I think what we can gain from this parable is the why of all of our decisions beyond the what. Meaning, what is our intention? What is our hope? What is our reason behind what we are doing? Why are we investing in this industry or that company or this community, in this resource, in these people? Why do we care about PFDs or oil and gas or fishing? Why do we care about having extra jackets and shoes in our cars or airline miles or money in the checking account? Is it so that I can take care of myself and me alone? Is it a reflection out of my values? That I support small businesses and I want to shop locally, but I also really love the rush of Amazon packages on my front porch? Is it so that I can save up and have a really impressive savings account so I can retire at 40? It's not going to happen, don't worry. Or spend all day eating donuts and lazing about? Is it so that I can make sure the kids in my life, no matter how old, always have what they need and sometimes what they want? Listen, I'm going to stick by my stance and not give you an opinion on those three hot button topics, because it's not going to get us anywhere. But what I can say is that the message we can take from Jesus in this parable is to look for our why, to spend our time thinking about what we do with our wealth, whatever that looks like, our money, our investments, our gas points, our airline miles, our extra jackets and shoes. Why do we have it? Why do we do it? And why does it matter? Jesus, in his final words of this particular story, reminds us that we cannot serve God and wealth simultaneously. We cannot serve, love, proclaim, and claim the God who loves like the creator, redeemer, and sustainer, and also worship the wealth in bank accounts and our stuff. We are able to share our time because Jesus first spent his time. Jesus spent literal days, months, and years hanging out with people just like us and getting dirt on his feet just like us and wearing clothes just like us and having hard conversations with people he disagreed with just like us. We are able to share our talents, our skills, because Jesus first shared his talents, his voice of teaching, his arms calling for the children to come to him, his heart for loving those who were cast off and forgotten, and his back for carrying the cross. We are able to spend our treasure because Jesus first spent his. And while I'm fairly certain Jesus didn't have airline miles or a coffee punch card, he had wealth. He chose to take the physical stuff in his possession in this world and spend it, invest it, use it for the sake of building up the body of Christ. Now, dear friends, I still struggle with this parable and with any conversation around wealth in the Bible, not because I feel like I live extravagantly, but because I know that my wealth far exceeds the resources of those who sleep on the street at night, and those who hold their breath and hope that the gas tank has enough fumes to get them to work, and those who look at the pantry and wonder how they're going to make it to the next paycheck. But I think Jesus' teaching about this owner and this manager is not just to point at those who have less, but to point back at us, all of us, no matter where we fall in that socioeconomics category, and help us to understand our why, to challenge us to think critically about what we invest in, who we invest in, and why we invest in these people and these things. And that why, finding that we are able to do all of this, no matter how much or how little you think you have, but we're able to do it because we were loved first. We are loved fiercely, and in spite of our less than charming behaviors, in spite of how we do our jobs, or in spite of what we do to people in our lives. We are loved because our God invests in us each and every day. When maybe the market outlook on that investment in humanity doesn't look so hot, we are loved because our God invests in us each and every day, even when the reward points aren't super helpful to God. We are loved because our God invests in us each and every day, Because God's why is love. Jesus's why is love. And so choosing to serve God over wealth means that we choose love. Thanks be to God. Amen.